159 Ivy Street, Chapter 11. Don't leave me, please. Braddon sat still, almost reverent in his quiet. The ambulance hummed beneath him like a living thing, its vibration threading up through the metal bench and into his bones. Machines blinked and beeped with mechanical patience, tubes and wires clinging to Lisa as if they were afraid to let go. The sound, the steady, impersonal beeping was meant to reassure. It meant she was alive. It meant order. But nothing about this felt ordered. Just hours ago, they were sitting by the window at Phil's pub while having their last unromantic dinner before Lisa's departure to L.A. It was supposed to be simple, unromantic, a closing bracket. Braddon wanted to tell Lisa about his Josephine, his new love, not to hurt her. Never that, but because truth mattered. Because he had finally found something that felt clean, even if it was unconventional, a love made of voices and late-night confessions, of longing without touch. That was no longer important. Truth no longer mattered, not now and perhaps never. His mind and heart were empty of promises, stripped bare, as if whatever God-governed timing had reached down to erase the future mid-sentence. There may not be a tomorrow if Lisa doesn't wake up from this nightmare. The ambulance lurched slightly as it wove through traffic. Too much traffic. Braddon's jaw tightened as headlights streamed past the rear windows. Why are there so many cars? He muttered, anger flaring sharp and useless. It's fucking New Year's night. People should be home, hungover, with families, making plans they'd forget by February, not driving, not rushing, not existing in the way, his hands curled into fists. He hated this version of himself, the one who couldn't fix anything. The man who always knew what to do was suddenly reduced to a passenger, strapped in by fate and fluorescent light. His mind refused stillness. Images flashed uninvited, like subliminal ads attacking his senses. Lisa is laughing in his kitchen, barefoot, stealing olives from a jar. Josephine's voice whispering Peb like a secret meant only for him. Emily's hopeful eyes. Each image pulled him further from the safe place where he used to store happiness. Josephine felt impossibly far away, not in miles, but in frequency, like a radio station just out of tune. The line connecting them hummed, unstable, temporarily out of order. The paramedics continued to keep checking Lisa's vitals as the ambulance weaved through the New Year's night traffic. How much longer? Braddon snapped suddenly. Which hospital are you taking us to? His tone was sharp, brittle. It surprised even him. The paramedic closest to him didn't flinch. They were trained to face rudeness with a lack of appreciation for their work. Under extreme circumstances, they understood the cause and justification. We are close, she said softly. The turnoff is 2 kilometers away. We are heading to St. Michael's Hospital. A team is on standby the moment we pull in. The paramedic who responded was a female and was sitting closest to Braddon. Her voice was calm and empathetic. Thank you, and I'm sorry. Braddon's voice came out almost like a whisper. It occurred to him how closely they were situated in the ambulance. There's no room for the need to be loud or rude. Hi, my name is Jennifer or Jen. Is she? Jen hesitated gently. Is she your wife? Braddon exhaled, a sad half-laugh escaping. No, interesting prospect, but know that ship has sailed a long time ago. He looked at Lisa, then back down at his hands. She, Lisa, is my best friend, my closest friend, and we were having dinner. I don't even know what happened. Braddon's response came across as a reflection of their past, as if it had already become history, a subconscious fear that a new reality could be imminent. Jen has a degree in psychology, and she's worth every penny. The report read that Lisa was hit by a vehicle that slid when she stepped onto the road. Not much more than that. She's strong. I've seen worse. What's your name? Jen asked. For the first time, Braddon moved his gaze off the metal floor of the ambulance. He aligned his sight and saw Lisa's face that was partially obscured by the oxygen mask. He looked towards Jen, less than 2 feet away. She had strong shoulders like a swimmer. Her hair caught the light, a reddish gold that made him blink. God has a wicked sense of humor. You have red hair. Hi, I am Braddon. My name is Braddon. Jen snorted. What did you mean by that? My hair is reddish from my mom's side of Scottish ancestry. Nothing to do with God. If God's responsible for this color, I want a refund. Before Braddon had the chance to respond, the ambulance came to a stop in front of the emergency doors of the hospital. The doors flew open. Cold night air rushed in, brutal and grounding. Jen jumped out of the ambulance while the other paramedic gathered the monitoring machines, then placed them on the gurney. The transfer was fast. Efficient hands, clipped commands, the gurney rolling away from him before his heart could catch up. Reality returned with a vengeance from 30 seconds ago when Braden was talking about Jen's red hair. "Sir," a nurse said, clipboard in hand, "I need some information from you." The nurse with a clipboard in hand reached out to Braden, signaling for him to get out of the ambulance. Things were happening quickly, and Braden needed to gather himself to keep pace. The night air was biting through his coat. Midnight again, always midnight. His life had developed a cruel pattern lately, everything unraveling just before the clock struck 12. "Hi, my name is Braden. I'm a friend of the patient." "Sir, I got the report from the paramedics before you got here. I just need her ID and health card if you have them." "What? I?" Braden turned to face the ambulance. Lisa's unmistakable red coat lay in a bundle on the floor with her purse beside it. "Okay, I think I have it. Give me a minute." Brad hopped back into the ambulance to pick up Lisa's belongings. He immediately recognized the perfume from her silage coat, Dior J. Ador, her scent, familiar enough to hurt. He opened the handbag, and inside was the card holder. "Here, her driver's license and her health card. Anything else?" Braden was relieved that he was able to do something, finally. "Yes, this is perfect. Your friend is inside being administered. You should be there." "Thank you, nurse. I don't know your name, so I don't know what else to call you, sorry." From a distance, Jen called out to Braden. "Hey, come with me quickly." Braden saw Jen waving at him from a few feet past the emergency doors. Panic hit him square in the gut. He ran quickly inside. What happened? "Do I want to know?" Jen spoke calmly. Braden, breathe. "Lisa is in the best place and getting the best care for her, okay? Now Lisa is awake." Beyond Jen's shoulder, he saw the edge of the gurney surrounded by a medical team. They were moving Lisa for an x-ray and for blood work. Inside the ER, controlled chaos reigned. Lisa was awake. "Please." Brad ran the few feet towards the gurney. He saw Lisa's eyes were open, cloudy, frightened, but open. Brad took her hand gently, like it might break if he didn't ask permission first. "Hey, Lise, I'm here," he whispered. Lisa squinted at him, then smiled, just a crack. "My Bradley," she murmured. "To my rescue. Am I in a hospital?" Lisa, being the strong woman that she's been as long as Brad can remember. "Yes, silly girl, you're in a hospital. I'm here, and you will be fine." Braden's voice wanted to be supportive and convincing. She studied him. "Okay, Dr. Bradley, I'm in your capable hands." For a heartbeat, Braden saw Lisa just as she was before the accident. Braden laughed, careful not to cry. "I love the sound of that, Dr. Bradley. Sounds like a TV doctor in a daytime soap opera. My mom would be so proud." Braden managed a genuine and non-concerning smile, looking at Lisa. "I happen to love doctors," Lisa said, then quieter, clearer than anything else she'd said that night. "And I love you, Bradley, I always have." The noise of the monitors came to life. Red and yellow lights kept flashing like a disco nightclub. Except this wasn't a dance party, and it was just the beginning. Lisa's eyes were closed, and she was no longer responsive. "Sir, I need you to stay back. This is a code blue / gray emergency. There's a post-op waiting room on the second floor. Please wait there." The gurney sped away while Braden stood frozen like a statue. Tears started filling the corners of his eyes, then fell along his cheeks. His bad knees could no longer hold up his weight as he crumbled onto the cold hospital floor. In a child yoga-like pose with his hands crossed as in prayer, Braden whispered in the faintest of words, "Please don't leave me." Josephine had learned over the years that there were different kinds of silence. There was the good silence, the kind that settled into a room after laughter when nothing more needed to be said. The kind that wrapped itself around a voice message replayed too many times, familiar enough to feel like a touch. And then there was this silence, the kind that pressed against the chest, the kind that made time stop behaving properly. Josephine was awake, sitting in her bed, wondering what the hell was going on. She hadn't heard from Braden for hours. The few seconds of their last conversation were dire and laced with desperation. She knew something had gone seriously wrong and was totally frustrated, not knowing. She knew Lisa was somehow involved, and although it bothered her, Jose was concerned for everyone. It had passed midnight. She recalled what Brad said on the phone earlier. They will be meeting in person on February 14th, at the Empire State Building. She grabbed hold of her knees and then pulled them tightly towards her chest. The self-hug felt comforting, and the thought of seeing Brad had made her smile. She wanted to call Brad on the phone to apologize for what she had said in the call. Jose knew the timing was not good and that Braden needed to deal with whatever was going on. Jose's breathing felt shallow. She stood and walked to the window. The city below her apartment was quiet in that strange post-holiday way. Empty streets, leftover fireworks debris, a few taxis prowling like insomniacs. Somewhere out there, Braddon was in a hospital. Somewhere out there, a woman she had never met, yet already felt bound to, was lying under surgical lights. Joes climbed back into bed and pulled the duvet up around her shoulders like armor. The apartment felt too large, too hollow. She considered turning on the television, but the thought of other people's noise felt invasive. Instead, she reached for her phone. No new messages. Her thumb hovered over Braddon's name. Don't. She had told him she needed space, had asked for air. Now the air felt thin, unsatisfying, almost cruel. She turned onto her side and hugged a pillow to her chest, curling inward instinctively, as if making herself smaller might make the waiting easier. This is what love does, she thought. It rearranges the furniture inside you without asking permission. Joes felt the need to talk to someone. She started dialing. Hello! Whoever this is, you'd better have a damn good reason for calling so late. Do you know what time it is? Natalie was not amused by the late-night call, and she made sure that the caller felt her agitation. Natalie, it's me, she said, her voice already breaking. I didn't know who else. Oh shit, sorry about that, I didn't know it was you. Jose, what's wrong? Natalie said immediately, already awake, already present. She got out of bed and then went to the kitchen so her husband won't be bothered. Jose, do you want me to come over? What happened? Thanks, Nat, I'm okay. You don't need to come over. I just needed someone to talk to. Josephine was feeling guilty about having to share her problems with her best friend at 12:37 in the morning. Well, I am your best friend, so I'm here for you. Spill it. What's going on? Is it about Braddon? When is it ever not about Braddon? Of course, it's Braddon. Natalie already knew the answer before Josephine had to say anything. Did I tell you about Lisa? She's Braddon's friend, a very close friend. Natalie stopped Jose before she had the chance to continue. Josephine, this better not be a jealousy thing because we are way too old for this crap. No, well, mostly no. Lisa and Braddon were at a restaurant or something like that. I am not entirely sure. Then something happened. I heard a noise, then Barton had to go because Lisa got hit by a car. Josephine let the words spill out unevenly. She tried to make sense of it all, and by saying it out loud, the whole story sounded more confusing than ever. When she finished, Natalie exhaled slowly. Jose, let me break it down one segment at a time. Lisa and your Braddon were in a restaurant. Then you and Braddon were on a call, and Lisa somehow ended up outside and got hit by a car. Did I get it right? Do you know how insane that sounds? That landed. Natalie, this whole situation of me falling in love with Braddon is completely insane. And I am quite sure you would agree 1,000%. Then Braddon was talking to this Emily person, and she was the one who told him about the accident. But I think this Emily knew them both, so it's like a threesome. I have no freaking idea what is what anymore. And I can't call Braddon to ask him. Josephine closed her eyes. Oh my God, Jose, this is better than a Spanish TV soap opera. I'm sorry if I was insensitive, but this is beyond insane. You do know that, right? Josephine broke down and started crying. Tears slid down Josephine's temples and into her hair. She was completely overwhelmed by the intense undulation of emotions. This relationship with Braddon has been the best and the worst emotional roller coaster ride in the name of love. Braddon told me that we are meeting on February 14th on the observation deck at the Empire State Building. Natalie almost fell off her chair in the kitchen. What? That's a good thing, right? Unless you feel differently. Finally, this is amazing. Well, unless he's really ugly and only 4 feet tall, then that will be the end of it. Seriously, Jose, how do you feel about that? First of all, I don't care about his looks. I will love him just the same, I hope. Laughter broke out to release the tension. Nat, honestly, I am scared shitless. After 3 months of getting to know Brad, I am so in love with him, and if this fails, I will be devastated. At the same time, we need to face reality, making this real by meeting. It's already sounding crazy. This is all but a dream, but it is completely real to me. Does that make me a crazy person? Josephine was out of words to make sense of anything. Yet she remained loyal to her seemingly hopeless idea of lasting love. Jose, you have to be crazy if you want to be in love. There's a marginal difference between insanity and passion where true love will be discovered. This journey could be one of the best love stories that I have ever heard that wasn't from a movie. Speaking of movies, you're about to have an affair to remember real life moment. I'm jealous. Thanks, Josephine's cell phone buzzed. She got a text message. OMG, Nat, I just got a text message from Brad. He's at the hospital. Lisa is at the hospital and she may not make it. OMG, I should be there with him. He's all broken up. What do I do, Natalie? Girly, text him back to tell him that you love him and that you are there for him no matter what. He needs time to deal with whatever may or may not be happening. It's in God's hands. He just needs to know that you love him. I know, thanks, Natalie. Why does it feel like I'm not doing enough? I feel so helpless. Josephine was pleading for more ideas to change the scenario. Jose, I know you want to be there to throw your arms around him. Braden knows that the reality right now is the distance separating the two of you. Perhaps in a few months, the situation will change and you will bloom in each other's arms. Just be there for him, even from a distance. He will love you just the same. Natalie, you're a great friend and thanks. Thanks for everything. No, you don't get off so easily, Josephine. You owe me a full-blown soap opera story. I want to know this Lisa and this mystery person, Emily, and whoever comes along. And yes, I want to know this Braden who is about to steal my best friend from me. But I love you just the same. Oh, Nat, I love you too. Gotta go, I have a text to send. After the call, Josephine sat back against her headboard and stared at the ceiling. She thought of Braden's voice the night he told her about his childhood, the way it had cracked when he spoke about loss, the careful way he avoided saying names. She thought of the faith he pretended not to have. She clasped her hands loosely in her lap. I don't know who you are, she whispered, not to God exactly. But if you're listening, please don't take Lisa. Not like that. Not tonight. She wasn't bargaining. She was pleading. Joe started her text to Braden. Brad, I am so sorry about what I said before, but I am here now. I want us. I'm in love with you and you need to know that. For now, take care of your friend and I will pray for her. Everything will be fine, I feel it. As long as we are fine, then the rest will fall into place. Hold me in your heart because that is where my love is. Your Peb. Oh, never a dull moment, but how much can I take? No matter what, this is us. Good night, my love, I will dream of us. The hospital hallway felt suspended between worlds. Braden's aching knees forced him to get off the hospital floor, only to realize that he was in the middle of the hallway. As he got onto one knee, he noticed a figure hovering over him with an extended hand. He took the hand that helped him up to his feet. The man in front of Braden was dressed in black with a white band collar. He was either a clergyman or someone of religion. There was something strangely familiar about this man. Braden felt at the moment their eyes met. Hi, Father Peter. You can call me Peter, just Peter. Do you need someone to talk to? The priest asked gently. I'm here for you if you allow me. Braden listened, mesmerized. Hello, Father. I don't know what to say. Have we met before? You seemed very familiar. Braden felt something odd about Father Peter. His eyes, I have seen them before, but I can't remember when, but he wasn't a priest then. Telling me your name would be a good start, and I don't think we have met before, at least not as I, a priest. What does that mean? I am exhausted and confused. Apologies, Father, of course. My name is Braden Beckett. My friend was hit by a car, and she is in intensive care or something. Braden couldn't hold off the tears and felt a little embarrassed. Hello, Braden, or should I call you Bradley? It took Braden by surprise. What did you say? Father Peter spoke in a calm tone and delivery as if he were in a confessional. Bradley is a common name, is it not? I guess. I am a little jumpy, tired and frustrated. I am sorry, Father. That's perfectly fine. I am sure your friend will be fine too. God works in mysterious ways and you will find yours. Your heart is big, but it has limits. The distance may seem great now, but your faith will carry you through the barriers and borders. In time, you will find the angel with the arrow. Aim and fire away with everything you have. She will be waiting to catch the arrow. Braden was immersed in every word Father Peter said. How did he know what I'm going through? Maybe it's a case of cognitive dissonance just to make sense of it all. Father, thank you, but... Braden's phone rang. It was Emily on the phone. Sorry, Father, excuse me for a minute, please. Braden turned away from Father Peter to text Emily on the phone. Hey, Em, can't talk now, but we'll call back in 5 minutes. Braden took a deep breath and turned to Father Peter. Sorry, Father, that was... Father Peter was no longer there. Braden scanned down the hallway on both ends, and the priest was nowhere to be seen. Braden called out, Father Peter, hello, Father Peter. No one was in the hallway except Braden by himself. A door opened from one of the offices 10 meters away. Braden thought that it would be Father Peter, but it was. An older gentleman stepped into the hallway with a file folder under his arm. Hi, sorry to interrupt. Do you know where I can find Father Peter? The old man gave Braden a quizzical look. I'm sorry, young man, who are you looking for? Hi, my name is Braden. I was talking to Father Peter a minute ago in the hallway, but I can't find him. He seemed to have taken off. The old man replied in a serious tone, Mister, we don't have a priest here unless someone asks for one. That hasn't happened for a very long time. We do have a chapel in the basement, but it's locked. Do you want me to get someone to open it for you? Braden felt something was out of place. All of a sudden, an image flashed in his mind, an image of his best friend from his first year of boarding school. He died in a car accident during the holidays in their third year. His name was Peter. The dead never really leave, he realized. They just wait for the right moment to remind you you're still loved. Mister, are you okay? The old man showed concern as Braden seemed dazed. Yes, I am fine, thank you. I'm just very tired. Do you know where the post-op waiting room is? I was told that it's on the second floor. Well, I can help you with that. You head down this hallway and you will see the elevator on the right. Press 2 and that will get you to the second floor. The waiting room is right there. The old man gave Braden a big smile as the creases around his eyes accentuated even more. Thank you. Thanks for your help. Young man, are you sure you will be okay? Braden smiles back. Yes, I will be fine. I have an angel somewhere that will make sure of it. Thanks. Braden headed down the hallway, and just like the old man said, the elevator was right there. Once he got up to the second floor, the post-op waiting room had a big overhead sign that read Post-op Waiting Room. The room was empty with a large screen TV playing hospital donation ads without any sound. Braden checked his watch. It's almost 3 a.m. How did I get here? It's too late to call Emily back. Tomorrow is another day. Wait, tomorrow is already today again. I hope the hospital won't mind that I get comfortable in one of the couches. Just as Braden got comfortable and ready to rest his tired body, his phone rang. It's Emily. Hey, Emily, it has been a long night and a long early morning. Are you at home? Are you okay? All Braden could hear was Emily crying on the other end of the phone. Braden tried to be strong, but he was also. Deep inside, in his quiet and safe place, he was drowning in tears. Braden, it's all my fault. I shouldn't have come over to your table. I made it happen, and now Lisa is in the hospital. No, not at all, Em. It had nothing to do with you, and you certainly didn't cause anything bad to happen. It just happened. You are not to be blamed, okay? Braden, I wish you were here. A moment of pause when Braden didn't know how to reply to that. Em, I need to be there at home. When I have news from the medical staff, I will call. I think Lisa is in surgery, but I'm not sure. Get some sleep. For sure, you're as tired as I am. I will call the moment I have an update. Good night, Em. When Braden hung up the phone, he noticed the blinking green light. Message, Braden checked his missed messages. MSG from Josephine. He took a deep breath and then started reading. Brad, I am so sorry. He closed his eyes. Somewhere between loss and hope, between breath and prayer, Braden understood. Love doesn't arrive clean. It arrives when you're on your knees. And it asks whether you're brave enough to stay.